Morning, Shawnee.
And good morning to you, Uncle Dean. Good
morning, Andy.
Good morning, Dean. How are you?
Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Dean, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea.
Good morning, Engineer Bob.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Ashley, who is in the production booth today. Yeah.
He's got his full romper room going on here.
This is like the Waltons in reverse.
Good night, Schwan boy.
Good night, Andrew.
I was just a little distracted here while you were doing your news.
You were distracted?
Yeah. I was just looking at my phone. And apparently, if I just send $100,000 to a Nigerian prince...
This prince has been on your list for a while here.
I could make millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
You've had this notification before.
I get it. I get it all the time. And each time I send $100,000.
Must be nice.
So far, I haven't gotten a penny from them. But if I do, I'm going to take care of both of you.
Oh, sure you are.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
You haven't even invited me to the TV station, but yet you're going to take care of me.
Well, that's because I don't want you at the TV station. And if I have to pay a lot of money to...
to keep me away, is that it?
Yeah, I'm happy to share this. If this Nigerian prince ever comes through, we're all
going to be taken care of.
We're all going to be living large.
Yeah, I keep getting the DMV scam text.
Oh, I get
That one twice a day.
Like five of those this week. Yeah. I bet. Did you get that one, Shawnee?
No, I get one that says, I'm taking a survey. Click on this link to participate.
Yeah.
Damn.
All you got to do is, I just had one of those.
During the election last year, I kept getting one from some political group, and then I got an angry text. We've asked you five times.
Yeah, well, they get nasty.
And you still haven't responded.
Yeah, they get nasty.
Mm-hmm.
They get nasty.
I still didn't respond.
I had one that sent me emails like five times. I forget what it was for. And then they called me.
Ooh. Oh, they did?
Wanting to know why I didn't respond. I said, you didn't take the hint that I didn't respond five times.
Yeah, that I didn't respond in the first place.
I didn't respond five times. Take a hint. It's not that hard.
Well.
Ah, our phones.
Like, when in doubt... don't do anything.
Life was better.
And quite seriously, this is how people get taken so terribly. I've seen, texts and phone calls about give us your number because if you don't, we're going to cut off your utility bills.
Yeah, and they prey on seniors.
Oh yeah,
because seniors. I guess their thinking is that. Seniors are less skeptical, if they get what looks like an official email or text or whatever, then they must respond to it.
Yep.
My mother did.
My dad came very close to being scammed once out of $2,500 or something
smokes.
Like that. Yeah, very, very close. I'm glad he called me because he said, he got an email that said, your order for your big screen TV is ready. Click here to process the order.
It's like, wait a minute, I don't remember ordering. Yeah,
I had to explain to him that that they make this up. There isn't an order.
Yeah,
and then
they just
went,
want you to click on the link.
Right,
That's the whole deal with these things.
Yeah,
all they want you to do is click on that link. So you just
don't never do it. Delete it. Deleted.
And they prey on old people like you.
May I remind you that I am not the oldest person on this program.
Yeah, tell that to your face. What? What?
Dean Richards, Sunday morning. Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
Hamilton to start us off today. It's Tony Awards Sunday. I can't wait. One of my favorite award shows of the year. The performances are amazing, and we get a best of what is on Broadway right now. And there's some great stuff that's on Broadway right now, but featured on the Tony broadcast tonight, that'll be on CBS, a reunion of the original cast of Hamilton. So that's going to be exciting. And lots of great performances, lots of great shows. As always, as I say for all the award shows, I watch so you don't have to.
Here's a question for you.
Yes.
Hamilton has this phenomenal popularity and following. Did they expect that? Did they anticipate it, that it would be that big?
I don't think they thought that it was going to be, I mean, the record breaker that it wound up mm-hmm. being.
Yeah.
Started as a little off-Broadway show. It started off as, they sat down and go, let's do a hip-hop version of American history. I'm sure they never thought, this is going to revolutionize, American theater.
Yeah, because I know, now 60 years ago, or almost 70 years ago, when they put together West Side Story, that was several years in the making. It was kind of on and off, and then it was on, and then it was off Broadway, and then...
Yeah. Boom.
Boom, right.
Yeah, that's what this show was. Boom, very definitely. I think it still holds the record for the most Tony Awards that were won.
I'm not surprised.
But it's going to be amazing that the original cast is getting together. I have not heard if they're going to perform or not. Are they just maybe going to present an award? I don't know what it's going to be, but...
I imagine they do a number or two from the show, don't you think?
Fantastic if they did. Hamilton's coming back to Chicago, too.
Is it?
We had this record-breaking run of Hamilton, 5 years that it played here in Chicago, and I'm just looking it up because I want to make sure I get the dates correct. Broadway in Chicago. Yeah, I can't find it.
What theater was it at again? What was the old Schubert Theater, I think, but it's another name
now. It's
been
so many names.
Yeah.
I think it's the CIBC Theater now.
I think that's right, yeah.
But, March 4th. To April 26th of 2026.
Next year, then.
So next year.
Okay.
Hamilton will be
mm-hmm.
Coming back. So we'll look forward to that. But anyway, we'll feature, some of the Tony nominees this morning. We'll talk about the big shows that are nominated. One of the big shows, and I expected to do very well with awards tonight, is Death Becomes Her. Did you ever see the original movie, Death Becomes Her, with Meryl Streep and Goldie Hawn? It's hilarious. It's hilariously funny. They adapted it to stage, and it got its world premiere here in Chicago, and then went on to Broadway, where it's been a huge smash. And when the show was here, we talked to its two stars, Megan Hilty and Jennifer Simard, who are both nominated for Tonys tonight, in addition to Death Becomes Her being nominated for Best Musical. We're going to replay that interview today. So we've got some Tony, actual Tony nominees we'll feature on the program today. We've got a show that is going to be, I think, one that people are going to be talking about in Chicago. That's What Friends Are For, that features the music of Gladys Knight and Patti LaBelle and Dionne Warwick over at the Black Ensemble Theater. They're going to stop in and visit with us this morning. We've got actor Benicio del Toro on the show today. He's part of this new Wes Anderson movie that's out right now, so we've got a lot of good stuff here today.
Wasn't that's what Friends are for. Wasn't that a hit for Dionne Warwick back in the 80s?
Dionne Warwick.
Elton John.
Stevie Wonder.
Stevie Wonder and Elton John. Yeah.
That really should be the theme of this show.
Keep smiling.
Right.
Keep shining.
Oh, boy.
And then Schwanny chimes in. And now... Da, da, da. I can't even think of the words of the song.
Andy knows the lyrics.
Played it a million times.
Had it right down.
Had a feeling, yeah.
Never thought I'd feel this way.
There you go.
Is that right?
Yeah. But as far as I'm concerned.
I'm glad I got the chance to say, Schwanny, keep shining. Keep
shining. You know, you can always count on me.
That's what the show is about.
And that's exactly what Friends are for.
Of course.
That's what Friends are for.
Sunday morning karaoke.
Yeah, with friends like you. You know, one of my favorite things to do every Sunday morning when I come in, get the show ready. You know, we go through.
Our rehearsal.
A lot of people don't know. We actually do a dress rehearsal of the show.
Yep.
Not one word of this show is ad lib. It's all rehearsed. It's all planned.
And if you believe that.
We write. We rewrite.
I hate when my teleprompter stops working.
Right. Originally, we were not going to do the That's What Friends Are For segment that we just did. We decided to put it back in.
Yep.
So all that's meticulously planned. But once all of that's done and the show is, as we say, put to bed. My next favorite thing to do is to read the texts from Steve and Johnny's show. Because, you know, our text line is just like a continuous thread, right?
Right.
They just keep coming in, and everybody's texts from everybody's shows are all on our text screen. I love the texts that come in on Steve and Johnny's show from last night.
So that's what I see you reading in there.
And laughing. Before.
And yeah, I think you're laughing at me when I'm doing my newscast.
No, no. At 1:10 a.m. this morning, a text came in. Hi, Steve and Johnny. I hit a skunk tonight.
Will you please play?
Too late for a car wash. I left my car out on the driveway. What do I do to get the smell out? I don't know if Steve and Johnny addressed that or not, but I love somebody texted it. I love that. This is the WGN relationship that we have with our audience.
Nothing like it.
You hit a skunk, you call 720.
We will tell you what to do.
The first thing you do when you have some roadkill, think of us.
Wasn't there a song to that effect?
What? Roadkill?
No.
A dead skunk
in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
It's one of Bob Collins' favorite songs.
Mm-hmm. He played that, and Grandma got run over by a reindeer.
He loved all the emotional hits. So what do you do to get the stink of a skunk off your car?
I have no idea.
I know if you get skunked. I've been skunked. Have you been skunked?
No, but I've had a dog that's been skunked before.
Oh,
that's got to be rough.
Oh, that's bad.
Not once, but twice.
Otis?
My parents' dog back in the mid-90s.
Yeah, that's not good.
He was a very curious dog and got too close to a skunk not once, but twice within about 2 weeks.
Back when I was a Boy Scout, I got skunked.
I've never been.
I didn't pay attention to my Warner Brothers cartoons.
Pepe Le Pew.
Like Pepe,
yeah, you. Exactly.
I thought he was just a romantic. I didn't know that.
Well, were you on one of the camping trips?
I was on one of my camping trips. I believe it was up at good old Owasipi Scout Camp, Whitehall, Michigan.
Yeah.
And I got too close to a skunk, and I got sprayed. And, ooh, baby. And then again, you think I would have learned. Again, later, as like, you know, maybe late teens, early 20s, I'm up in Upper Michigan. We used to go to Upper Michigan all the time, my buddies and I. And I got skunked again.
Up in the UP?
Up in the UP up
wow.
there. By
Marquette?
By Escanaba Gladstone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, by Escanaba Gladstone up there. And tomato juice.
Yeah.
you pretty much take a bath in tomato juice, and it doesn't,
that will absorb the
doesn't completely get rid of all of it, but it neutralizes it quite a bit.
Yeah, it helps.
So, Mr. Smarty Pants, you've never been?
No, I've never been. Affected by that. Huh. I've driven many times through, you know, areas, especially at night, and boy,
it lingers.
Smell it. It does.
It lingers.
You know, you could be have your windows totally rolled up, and it'll still permeate the car.
Now, interestingly here, on the text line, I'm getting several texts saying Steve and Johnny were off last night.
Hmm.
So this poor person got skunked
twice.
That's me that got hit twice.
Oh,
but this person who texted in who hit a skunk, they texted in reaching out for Steve and Johnny, and they weren't here.
Oh no,
I don't know.
That's sad.
Maybe we should text them back.
It was a best of last night.
Oh, okay.
Now I'm getting the full nine. I'm sorry I didn't listen. I love Steve and Johnny. Nobody's better, but, that's a little bit late for me to be up at that hour. So I apologize to them. But apparently it was a best of last night. They are out. It says they're out of town, not even in Florida, where I guess they frequently do their show, right, from Panama City. 847 area code says, hit a skunk, wash your car in tomato juice. Really? Very interesting.
Be a lot of tomato juice.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sure is. Buy those big gallon cans in the store.
You go to the Jewel. I'd like a 55-gallon drum of
tomato juice.
If possible, do you have that, please? You think that's all he does is provide us WGN news. But no, he also provides to us each week America's favorite feature. The far-flung forecast, our weekly compendium of fascinating facts and figures each week. And then at the end of it, he goes, good night and good luck. I don't know where he stole that from.
I don't say that, but...
You should start.
I should start.
You know, I think a lot of what we do on the show would be better if we start stealing from other people.
Other broadcasters?
Yeah.
That's never been done before, has it?
Yeah, let's do that. With the latest, here is Dave Schwant.
Thank you very much, Uncle Dean, and good morning, everyone. Get out your compasses and protractors and newfangled devices, because today we go to Clark, Missouri.
Clark, Missouri.
Or do you say Missouri? Yes.
Yeah, Missouri.
Clark, Missouri, in the northeastern section of the state. As you would head westward through Missouri toward Kansas City, it's in that vicinity. Randolph County, specifically.
Is one way or the other more correct? Is it more correct to say Missouri?
I think you can do either one.
Missouri.
You know, having had relatives that were in southern Illinois, they said Missouri, and I've heard Missouri on a number of occasions. There's also a town in Oklahoma called that looks like Miami, Florida.
Yeah.
But they say Miami.
Hmm.
They say Miami. So, hence, you know, very, Missouri.
Very confusing.
Also.
Cairo.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. El Dorado. You say potato. I say potato.
It's all very confusing to me.
You know what? Let's call the whole thing off. And here is Clark, Missouri.
I'm going to write that down.
Population.
I'm feeling a song coming on.
Three guesses to the population.
Okay. You're going to give me... I get three guesses?
Yes.
Or you're going to give me three choices?
I'll give you three choices. 102.
No.
298.
Mm-hmm.
Or 376.
The middle one.
You are correct, sir. 298 people.
I know my population.
Clark, Missouri has been around since 1887.
You're telling me.
It was named for a man named John Bullock Clark Jr., who ended up being a five-time congressional representative from the state of Missouri.
What was his name, Bullock?
Bullock. Bullock. As in, like Sandra Bullock, the actress.
Yeah, or full of Bullocks.
But we mention Clark for a very important and significant reason.
Oh, my.
This small town was the birthplace of a gentleman who became General Omar Bradley. Mm. And he, along with another general named Dwight D. Eisenhower, were
D-Day
head
coming.
Of what became the largest invasion in history 81 years ago this past Friday, D-Day, with the anniversary of D-Day, 160,000 troops invaded the coast of northern France. It remains the largest in military invasion in history. But General Omar Bradley, birthplace Clark, Missouri, and Dwight D. Eisenhower were the Americans who oversaw it. They had British and French officers as well, of course, participating in that. But 81 years ago Friday, D-Day.
I'm glad you brought that up because that's still such a moving event to me.
It is. Yes.
When you see the black and white footage of that bravery of the invasion, the soldiers pouring out of those boats to a blanket.
Walking right into enemy fire.
Walking right into enemy fire. It's just one of the most moving things. And somebody wrote, I don't even know who wrote it, but I read an editorial by somebody that in case we ever forget how important democracy is around the world, there's a reminder of, you know, the people who felt like there was something worth fighting for, freedom and democracy.
Yes. And may I say, it's been an honor to have a rather personal connection to the D-Day event because a lifelong good friend of mine's father landed on the beach in Normandy on that day. And, you know, obviously lived to tell about it. But it was also very touching that my friend and his father, for the 40th anniversary, went to the beach there at Normandy for the commemoration.
Have you ever gone there?
I have not, and it's on my list. I need to go.
I want to go, but I know I would be reduced to a puddle of tears.
Absolutely, yeah, especially when you walk up, you know, into the cemetery town.
I can't even imagine. Yeah. I'm very moved by all of that. Anytime I've visited, you know, when I visited ancient places in Rome or Greece or whatever, I'm very moved by what must have happened in the place where I am standing.
How about it? Yeah.
Hundreds and thousands of years ago, I can't even imagine how overwhelmed I would be by that sense of, you know, complete courage that the D-Day forces, you know, undertook to ensure freedom in the world.
Yep. And the fact that I remember talking to my friend's father about this, and I said, what, how did you find out about this, you know, the day before? Because it was top secret.
Right.
And his answer was, we got our orders and we went.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that generation.
It is the greatest generation.
Yeah. You want a stinging reminder of what that was. Take a look at the movie Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
First 20 minutes of that movie.
Yeah.
Gut-wrenching.
Yeah, right. And then another moving experience is the World War II Memorial on the National Mall in Washington there.
Yep.
So Clark, Missouri, birthplace of General Omar Bradley, who helped oversee the D-Day invasion. A mostly sunny day there now. It's 66, but it's going to be 81 for a high.
Time for the Week in Health. How can we make your life a little better? That's where Dr. Jeremy Silver comes in, medical director, emergency medicine, Kishwaukee Hospital. Dr. Silver, my friend, welcome to the show again. Nice to have you with us.
Hey, good morning, Dean. Thanks for having me.
A couple of interesting studies regarding cancer this week. Can you fill us in on what is the latest? But some of it seems pretty hopeful.
It does indeed. I think you're referring at least in one of these studies to multiple myeloma and possibly on the edge of what some are saying may be a cure. There was a study of about 100 patients who were at the end of the clinical road. They had exhausted standard care. and they receive this infusion of their own T cells. Those are part of the immune system. They're warrior cells, if you will, that had been genetically modified, infused back into their body, and they were cancer free, a large percentage, complete remission, lasting at least 5 years.
Wow,
that's just unheard. It's basically unheard of.
Yeah,
and you know these these modified cell infusions are nothing new. The issue is they're really tough to get it right. And you know, imagine taking a stick off a tree and trying to whittle, a perfect type of shape. Like if you were trying to whittle a picture of your own face. I mean,
right.
It's that intricate. How many times you'd have to do it to get it right? In millions, right? And so that's kind of what's been happening in the lab. And this company, Legend Biotech, partnered with Johnson & Johnson, and this could be huge, you know. And even if there's problems with it down the line, you've bought these people 5 more years, which, you know, is a lifetime when you're dying of cancer. So myeloma is a horrible disease. It's a disease where you develop these dysfunctional cells in your bone marrow that basically eat away at your bone marrow, and it's just it's awful. 36,000 Americans develop it every year, and so if a third of them can be cured, that's a large number of people.
That's a pretty big deal. This is just a study that has come out this past week. It's got a long way to go before complete implementation. But very hopeful for people with multiple myeloma. And I would think that it must have some effect on other cancers as well, that other researchers would look at that and go, maybe something similar would work for breast cancer or stomach cancer, colon cancer, or you know, something, you know, might open a window in other kind of research, right?
Well, this is the beauty of shared science in an era where information is instantaneously available. Exactly right. Somebody in a lab halfway around the world says, wait a minute, I can apply this to my research. And the next thing you know, you have a cure for cancer. So pretty exciting. If you have multiple myeloma, your ears might perk up. I definitely recommend mentioning this to your oncologist. If you're out there.
Yeah. Related, another trial was completed that showed that an exercise program lowers the risk of colon cancer. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, this was interesting. You know, exercise we know is good for the body. And I think we intuitively understand that it's just a part of being human. But recently, there's been a plethora of research showing that it actually reduces inflammation. We know that inflammation is a key contributor to disease, whether it's cancer or coronary artery disease or what have you. But we haven't had a lot of hard evidence to say, well, and this is exactly the type you need and how much you need and who needs it, et cetera, et cetera. So this was 900 patients at 55 cancer centers in 6 countries. So a huge swath of the human population, big study. And it showed that people who participated in a structured program, right, it's not just, I think I'll take a walk today, but they actually had to do certain things, lived longer without their cancer coming back and without the occurrence of new cancers, both of which are problematic, right? Once you've got cancer, you worry about it returning. But you're also more likely to develop another cancer. And so a 37% lower risk of dying and a 28% lower risk of recurrent or new cancer than those who were in the control group. That means there were people that were studied that were exercising and people that were studied that weren't doing the structured exercise, and it was a significant difference. So that's massive. You know, the study goes on and on to look at different things. But I think, if I'm reading this, I'm going to go out, and if I've got cancer, I'm going to get a personal trainer. I'm going to say, hey, listen, I want to mirror that study.
Yeah.
Help me get my program up to snuff. And you could probably even just Google it and go in and see what they did and then do it yourself.
Yeah.
Even if you don't have cancer, heck, why not? It can't hurt.
Yeah, what a shock. Exercise is good for you. How about that? Let me take a break. When we come back, how the cup of coffee that you're having this morning might influence aging. We'll get to that coming up next. And our weekend health segment with Dr. Jeremy Silver from Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Turns out that your morning cup of coffee may be influencing your health in a good way when it comes to aging. Doctor, please explain.
Well, Dean, I'm glad you emphasized morning because I think the timing may matter. There's been a number of studies over the last few years that have looked at coffee intake and longevity reductions in risk of cardiovascular disease and things and cancer and other things. And I think the takeaway is that caffeinated coffee has some components in it that are positive for health, anti-inflammatory most likely. And there's another study that just came out, the Healthy Aging in Women study. It was a study of 47,500 nurses over 30 years. Okay, so this is not just a snapshot. This was a long, drawn-out program where they looked at the consumption of caffeinated coffee in midlife, by the way. And it was correlated with 2 to 5% higher odds of healthy aging. So that's defined as living past 70 with no major chronic disease or decline. That's significant. And it was 2 to 3 cups. That was kind of the sweet spot. And that's consistent with other studies, this kind of 3-cup range. And again, it's got to be caffeinated. And the thought is also that by drinking it in the morning, you're aligning your circadian clock, meaning that internal clock that tells you to wake up in the morning and go to bed at night. And some other studies have shown that drinking it in the afternoon doesn't have the same benefit because then you're screwing up your bedtime, so to speak. But I think that, you know, we're seeing lower mortality with coffee at 3 cups a day. We're seeing higher odds of healthy aging. I tell my patients all the time, coffee drinking is good for you. And again, the last piece of this is, as we always say in moderation, some of these studies have something called a J-curve. And without getting too sciencey about it, on the low end of the spectrum, like 1 cup a day, you don't see benefit. On the high end of the spectrum, 6 to 8 cups a day, you don't see benefit. It's that, you know, Goldilocks, just right kind of area that where you start to have a real bang for your buck.
Yeah, so like 2 to 3 cups and caffeinated too. I'm surprised.
Correct.
I'm surprised about the caffeination. Because, you know, forever doctors have said try to go decaf to keep your blood pressure down a little bit. Very, very interesting study. Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Have a great Sunday, Doc. We'll talk with you soon.
Cheers. Thanks, Dean.
20, the artist is...
I'm going to take a guess and say Patsy Cline.
You would be correct, my friend.
Okay.
Love Patsy Cline.
I do too, actually.
I have all her cassettes.
I have some 78s.
Do you really?
No. But I think she was, you know, she came, you know, into the business, the music business, when they were still making 78
sure.
RPM records.
Of course.
Who knows what those are today.
But you know that the Patsy Cline movie with Jessica Lange? I forget what year it came out, but cassettes were all the rage then.
Mm-hmm.
I had probably like 10 Patsy Cline albums on cassette.
Did you really?
That's how cool I am.
Which one of them featured the song Crazy.
Oh, baby.
Crazy for being so lonely.
I love this song, Back in My Baby's
Age,
because it's a very beautiful and up-tempo, but... the song to which you are referring.
crazy. I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. Oh, yeah.
You know who wrote this song?
A young Willie Nelson.
Young Willie Nelson.
Crazy.
You ever heard his version of it?
I don't think so.
Pretty cool.
I don't think so.
Because it lends itself. You know, it's Patsy Cline's signature song.
Oh, yeah.
But it definitely lends itself to the Willie Nelson style.
Yeah, I love the piano in this song. That, you know, that background piano there.
Right.
Really evokes an era and an atmosphere.
I may have to cancel all the guests on today's show. And
just you're just going to play Patsy Cline records.
Sorry to all the people that we arranged. Last minute call. God, I love her music so much. And that is why I am so looking forward to our next Dean's Night Out. It's going to be at the Drury Lane Theater this time in Oakbrook Terrace. They've got a show that is called Always Patsy Cline that features 25 of Patsy Cline's greatest hits, tells the story of her professional and her personal life, her tragic death, and the plane crash, the whole story. It's the whole Patsy Cline story. I cannot wait to see this show. And we're inviting you to join me for one of these Dean's Night Out that we've been doing. We're going to go to the Drury Lane, Oakbrook Terrace on Friday, June 27th. We're going to have one of our pre-show receptions where we, you know, get to meet all of you and chat and, you know, all like that. People always ask, what's Dave Schwann really like?
We did a Dean's Night Out. This is a long time ago, out in Rosemont, I think, we did one.
What do we do in Rosemont?
We had a dinner, and then invited some people, and there was a dinner there, and then we talked about things. You had a giveaway, some prizes.
People willingly came fun. To this?
A lot of people willingly came, yes.
We didn't force them? We didn't grab people from the Allstate Arena
and say, hey, come on over here.
The flea market and made them come over to our event.
Nope. They were there. Okay. They were there.
I don't remember
a couple
that.
People asked for pictures and that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's been quite a while ago now.
Yeah, it's nice. It's very nice. But people always ask, what's Dave Schwann really like? And
I hope.
I lie and tell them that you're nice.
That's what I was interested.
Everybody thinks she's like, oh, poor Dave Schwann. Dean picks on him all the time. Ladies and gentlemen.
Well, yes, I hear that.
You have no idea what Andy and I have to put up with each Sunday.
Sometimes it's a struggle to get here on Sundays just because of that.
It's rough. Oh. We put on a brave face on the air, but.
Yeah, you're in the studio. I have to, I'm located just off the newsroom.
Yeah, you're within striking distance.
Mm-hmm.
That temper goes wild. Andy's the first one to go.
My cat-like reflexes are tested every Sunday.
Cat-like reflexes.
Yes. Peripheral vision. Yeah. Always put to the test.
Good thing you got 9 lives.
You're exactly right.
So anywho, here's how you register to win tickets to join me to see this Patsy Cline show. It's going to be June 27th. It's going to be at the Drury Lane, Oakbrook Terrace. Always Patsy Cline is the name of the show. And all you have to do to enter to win a pair of tickets is go to WGNradio.com/contests. You fill out the whatever you fill out, and we'll pick 10 winners. Each one will get a pair of tickets, and we'll have a good old time. You guys want to come?
Yeah. Are you inviting me?
Yes.
You are inviting me.
Yeah.
What day is it?
June 27th.
Are you busy?
Yes, I have a newsroom to run. What?
It's Friday, June 27th
Friday,
at 6
June
p.m.
Friday, June 27th.
You don't have a newsroom to run on a Friday night.
No, but I do now.
You don't have anything to do on a Friday night at 6
but
o'clock.
But I do now.
You don't have to come. I'm not twisting your arm, but you're both more than welcome.
All right.
So if I came to this event,
yes,
and unannounced, more or less,
well,
you would tell me to stay. You would tell me to leave?
I
You would tell me to leave.
Well, you can't just show up unannounced. I have to know that you're going to be there so I can reserve tickets, you know, seats, and then show you the proper protocol that you deserve at your stage of life.
My stage of life?
Yeah. Yeah. We have to get someone to help you down the aisle.
Oh.
Find your seating. Schwani likes the thing that you put in your ear so you can hear what's going on stage. Hearing device, whatever it's called.
I haven't been to Drury Lane in a long, long, long time.
Well, this is, you know,
so this is an opportunity.
Time. Yeah. All right. Well, hey, I'm going to be there. And when are you going to decide?
Oh, I don't know. That afternoon.
Jeez. All right.
That afternoon.
Boy, the evening is
really... I'll just give you a quick call about 4:30.
The evening's shaping up already.
Hey, I'm coming over.
I already can hardly wait. WGNradio.com/contest. Schwani may be there, but come out to the event anyway. One of the many, many great songs in the musical Death Becomes Her, nominated for a Tony Award, to be given out tonight. This is Megan Hilty. Megan Hilty and also Jennifer Smenard were here in Chicago when they world premiered the adaptation of Death Becomes Her, the old movie with Meryl Streep and Goldie Hawn, and turned it into this enormously entertaining hit on Broadway that we saw in Chicago first. About a year ago is when they were here, and that's when they visited with us on WGN TV to talk about their production, Death Becomes Her.
Busy time in the downtown theater district right now. We also have another pre-Broadway world premiere that just opened up, Death Becomes Her, which is at the Cadillac Palace Theater, a live stage musical based on the 1992 movie of the same name. Joining us are the stars of Death Becomes Her from the TV series Smashin', many other stage and TV roles, Megan Hilty, and also two-time Tony Award winner Jennifer Smenard. Ladies, welcome. So nice to have you here with us.
Thank you.
And
didn't know till now that I actually won the Tony Award. I was actually nominated twice.
You were nominated?
Nominated twice, but I'm a two-time loser.
Let's just give you the statues.
Okay.
Really, I got nominated once, too.
Yes,
we're nominees together.
Let's get three statues in for these ladies. I was misinformed. I apologize.
Okay. I just can't take credit for something I didn't actually win.
I would have taken the credit.
But you know what I can take credit for? I, too, am a self-obsessed, moral-free weasel in Death Becomes Her, just like
me
Jason
too.
Alexander.
You two have so much in common.
I like any time I can work the word weasel into a review.
That's right.
One happy critic when that happens. Congratulations on this, because it's got to be so exciting. I mean, you're both so accomplished, but to be doing a pre-Broadway world premiere, I would think has to be extra special. Is it?
It does feel very special to build something from the ground up like this, especially when it's built off of something that is so iconic and so beloved already.
And how, I mean, everyone has been commenting to me, hearing that this was coming. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I saw the movie. Oh, I love the movie. How similar is it to what people remember from the 1992 movie?
Excellent question. You're going to have to come and see all the Easter eggs that we've sprinkled throughout the musical.
Yes.
And, of course, the writers have taken it in the direction that only musical theater can bring, and it's just added frosting to an already delicious cake.
Yeah, and you have quite a cast with you.
Yes.
Here in Chicago, don't you?
Yes. Christopher Sieber and Michelle Williams, they're remarkable. Everybody, it feels like every day I'm pinching myself because we're surrounded, cast, crew, creative team. It's just the best of the best.
Yeah, what's it like to be working with a Destiny's Child member?
It's amazing.
It's gotta be kind of cool.
She is so wildly talented, and she is also so warm and lovely, and so fun to work with.
So humble, and just dove right into this with such abandon, and you just have to come see her tear up the stage.
Yeah.
And our ensemble, the unsung heroes of any show, they are some of the most wonderful human beings and talents you'll ever see.
I always have such admiration for actors, especially, that are working in pre-Broadway productions, because it's been my experience in observing this, is that they are changing your script every single day, probably several times a day, I would imagine. What's that process like?
We just had a big scene go in last night, and we were so proud of ourselves because we nailed
it. We did it.
We did it. And,
is it just dialogue, or is it like...
Sometimes it's songs.
It's like songs are coming in and songs are coming out, right?
That's right, and that's part of the excitement. Go ahead.
Yeah, oh, I'm so sorry. But what that also does is it changes... huge technical cues. There are so many elements that, yes, we're doing an extra scene, but then they have to really work overtime backstage to make all of that stuff happen.
That's right. And our stage manager, Rachel Sterner, and the team she's assembled is probably one of the best I've ever worked with.
Ever.
You agree?
Yes.
I know.
Yeah.
We talk about it
all the time.
And also in Chicago, this is such a great theater town, and I hope your citizens and fans know that, because what a gem. Mm-hmm. And the local crew here, the locals here, to a person, have been just amazing. And I can see why a lot of shows come here to try out.
And the audiences, too. The audiences are so warm and receptive. The energy is electric. But also, we know immediately what works and what doesn't.
Everybody's
really
savvy.
So savvy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I always tell the story about how when Mel Brooks brought the producers here before I went to Broadway, and I talked to him about it. He said, I would never do a pre-Broadway show any place but Chicago, because the audiences give us so much back.
Yeah, I agreed.
Can't top that.
No.
Death Becomes Her will run through June the 2nd. It's at the Cadillac Palace Theater. If you want to get more information, you can go to BroadwayInChicago.com. Megan Hilty and EGOT winner, Olivier Award winner. How many awards should I give you?
There's too many to list, Dean.
Yeah. He's got my Boy Scout medal for good conduct.
That's right.
Jennifer Smart, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
So that was a year ago when Megan Hilty and Jennifer Smart were in Chicago. The world premiere of Death Becomes Her before it went to Broadway, before it became one of the biggest shows on Broadway, and now nominated for multiple Tony Awards tonight. Both Megan and Jennifer are nominated for Best Performance by an Actress in a Lead Role in a Musical, along with Audra McDonald in Gypsy, who could win her 7th Tony Award tonight. Jasmine Amy Rogers, who we also met here in Chicago before she went to Broadway, in the Betty Boop musical. She is nominated tonight, as is Nicole Scherzinger for Sunset Boulevard. We'll go over more of the Tony Award nominations coming up a little bit later on. And we'll get into our Week in Theater segment, a special show that pays tribute to the song That's What Friends Are For, with Dionne Warwick and Gladys Knight and Patti LaBelle. The Black Ensemble Theater, that's all coming up in a few minutes. Well, the great Gladys Knight singing her part of the 1985 hit That's What Friends Are For. Dionne Warwick, Gladys Knight, Elton John, Stevie Wonder. That's What Friends Are For. It's a Grammy-winning song. Maybe more important, it was the number one hit song also, but maybe more importantly, raised more than $3 million for AIDS research and prevention that year. And that's when we were, you know, like flat in the middle of the AIDS crisis. Thank goodness things have changed a little bit with all of that. But That's What Friends Are For is the name of the new show that has just opened up at the Black Ensemble Theater. That's What Friends Are For. Gladys, Dionne, and Patti. A celebration of sisterhood, soul, and legendary voices, written by our friend Daryl Brooks, who is the writer, director, producing manager, and director of the Black Ensemble Theater, and also one of the stars of the show, Rose Simmons, in with us this morning to talk about this show. Daryl and Rose, welcome to WGN. Daryl, welcome back to WGN.
Thanks, Dean. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to have you here with us. What a treat just to remember this song, and how amazing this was. These songs that raised so much money and were so meaningful back in the day, when you know the world was going through this AIDS crisis, that these four artists stepped forward to raise money and consciousness and awareness for all of this. That had to be part of what inspired you to put this show together, I would think, right?
Absolutely. I mean, putting this show together was just a wonderful treat for me, you know, and that particular song meant so much. You know, I remember when it came out, you know, I was, you know, I just turned 50 not too long ago. So, I remember the 80s fondly, and I also remember, you know, the AIDS epidemic and just knowing that Dion and Gladys, you know, had you know, put this thing together, especially with Stevie and Elton, really, really touches you, does make you know it, that we all are friends. That's what friends are for. That's what the song is about, right? And that we should be able to reach out to each other in our times of need.
Right. Yeah. But, one of the other things, though, is that it really we all know that all of these artists were spectacularly talented.
Absolutely.
And you took that that aspect of it and brought it into this new show of yours. That's What Friends Are For. Talk to us a little bit, because the show is not specifically about this one song. It's about these three amazing performers, right?
Absolutely. See, one thing that I don't think that people understand, and I say this all the time, is that Patty, Gladys, and Dion have been friends for over 50 years. Yeah, and that's a big deal. So you know, a lot of times we look at these superstars and we're just like, we're surprised that they're friends, right? But then we have to realize that they are people like you and I, you know? And so their friends are just, you know, a little bit different, you know, in a different tax bracket, but, you know, also a performance bracket. But, you know, they say they call each other all the time, they're sisters, you know, and there's never any drama, never has been any drama. So I wanted to celebrate that, and also celebrate three very, very important Black women, you know, and their legacy. And so that's what this show does. That's what it does. And it's just a good time. It's just fun.
Yeah. And I would think, you know, in addition to being friends, they all came up at the same time.
Absolutely.
As well, and had shared experiences that Black women, only Black women, experienced back in the day. So they probably were, you know, comforting each other, helping each other during difficult times in their early careers.
Absolutely. We talk about that in the show, just about how much they uplift each other. And they call each other sisters, and they mean it. Yes, they absolutely mean it.
So Rose Simmons plays Gladys Knight in the show. That's not too intimidating for an artist. Holy smokes.
I'm honored. I really am. She's an amazing artist.
I know. We were playing that little clip here from the song. You were singing along with it. You know, so it must truly be inspiring for you to play an artist who has had such an amazing catalog of hits.
Yes.
Is, you know, part of the soundtrack of all of our lives, right?
Most definitely. Most definitely. I'm thrilled, excited to be working with a special group of people that all have their individual talents, and to be putting forth these artists, Gladys, Patty, and Dion's work. It's really kind of life-changing, honestly. Yeah. It feels really, really good to be able to be put in the position to do that.
Yeah. Well, it's part of what Black Ensemble Theater has always done for decades.
Yes.
With our old pal, our longtime pal, I shouldn't say old pal, but our longtime pal, Jackie Taylor.
Miss Taylor.
Is to bring some of that history back, you know, to us. For many of us, fond memories, but for younger audiences, here is the history. Here's how you got to be where you are today.
Absolutely.
Because of these people that are being put forward on stage right now.
Absolutely.
Trailblazers.
Yeah. Yes. So what are some of the highlight moments, Rose, for you during the show?
Well, I talk about my relationship with Les Brown, well, Gladys's relationship with Les Brown, and how that ended in divorce. And she's married to William now, and they've been married for over 24 years, and she's never felt this way about love. And it's just a beautiful thing to be in your older age and experience a love that you never existed or even thought that would be possible for you.
Yeah.
So I like that. Yeah. Of course. It's good.
Well, and you must, there must be pips all over the stage, I would
yes.
think also.
Oh, and they jam down. They are so awesome. I thoroughly enjoy it, yes. We have good fun.
What are your favorite songs to perform? What are your favorite Gladys songs to perform?
Well, my first and probably most favorite is Neither One of Us.
Oh, yeah.
Neither One of Us is, oh, it's just an amazing song.
Yeah.
I do Midnight Train to Georgia,
yeah.
The best thing that ever happened to me. And, of course, you have to do If I Were Your Woman.
Yeah.
So I feel like I have some great, she has some great songs that I'm doing, and I am so thankful to be doing it.
Yeah, we'll talk more about the show. That's What Friends Are For, Gladys, Dion, and Patty, playing now through July 27th at the Black Ensemble Theater, 4450 North Clark Street in Chicago. We'll tell you more about that show and some other special things coming up. The show is called That's What Friends Are For. Gladys, Dion, and Patty at the Black Ensemble Theater through July 27th. Daryl Brooks, producers of the show, is here with us, along with Rose Simmons, who plays Gladys Knight in the show. Now, Daryl, what you don't know is I know all of the steps, all the unison steps, you know, for this show. I could have easily been cast as one of the pips.
Listen, that can be four. Come on.
Daryl's just telling me it's going to be the 50th anniversary of Black Ensemble Theater. How great would it be if I came out as one of the pips?
Yeah.
All right, I should say, how surprising would it be for everybody? Yeah.
I'm sure Jackie Taylor would love that. Come on up anytime, Dean.
I think I know all the steps to these. One of the most humiliating moments of my life, the Four Tops were in town, 5 years ago, 7 years ago, something. And I was just goofing around with them. You know how they do their steps.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought I could moderately keep up with them. Not even close.
Not close.
Complete humiliation. a pleasure to have you both here with us to talk about the show. Talk about who is Patty, who is Dion, who else is, who else and what else is part of this show.
So we have our Patty LaBelle, her name is Tamara Batiste, and she's wonderful. The whole cast is wonderful, Dean. It was great. It was blessed to be able to find people that sound and act just like these women.
Yeah.
Sybil Walker is also playing Dion. And, you know, we know Dion very, very well because her and Jackie Taylor have a great relationship. And then we have and Rose, of course, plays Mature Gladys. And then we have the younger version of them. Courtney Driver plays a young Patty. We have Brianna Buckley is actually a young Dion, and Michaela. I can't remember Michaela's name. Sorry, Michaela. I can't remember your last name. But she plays a young Gladys. And then, of course, we have the pips. We have the guys. So this whole thing is set up as if they were in today. Having a residency in Vegas, right? And so we have
much like the show that they just did over at the United Center the other day.
Yes. So they're in the green room, and the three ladies are there. The matures are there, and they're just reminiscing about their life and just having a good time along with this hospitality team that is there. Charles Gibbons is the character's name. He's he's kind of head of hospitality. And so he's taking care of them as they guide themselves through the story. Dennis Dent plays Charles Gibbons. He's absolutely wonderful. And we just have just a wonderful cast. Luther Vandross is also a character in the show.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's great. Cause all of them had a great relationship with Luther.
So, and full orchestra as always, right?
Yep.
Like you always have at the Black Ensemble Theater.
Yep. Robert Redrick is leading the musicians and they are just, they're jamming, Dean. They're jamming.
Yeah, and you have a special show tonight that's called Soul of a Powerful Woman, We Shall Overcome. What is this special show tonight only?
Well, it's a fundraiser that we do every year, and it's a fundraiser that a lot of the powerful women that represent Chicago come and they perform. So we're talking about Toni Preckwinkle, Kim Fox, Jan Schakowsky would be there. They're performing.
They're performing.
Yeah. So it's always a great time. It's a good time. They get in really, really quickly. Jackie takes them through their rigorous rehearsal schedule today, and then they perform tonight. So it's going to be always a great time. It's something. I think this is the 12th year that
that's
I think
great. It's
been. I could be wrong. Maybe not 12. 11, one of those years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been going on for a while.
Still a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
And for a great cause to support the theater. You can get tickets for that at blackensemble.org. Same website for the show. That's What Friends Are For. Gladys, Dion, and Patty playing through July 27th, Black Ensemble Theater Cultural Center. It's 4450 North Clark Street in Chicago. Daryl Brooks and Rose Simmons, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you anytime, Dean.
Wonderful anytime. To see you both. And we'll take a quick break and update news next. Yeah, I think I found something else for us to do where we could do the show.
Yeah.
Only we never get around to doing it.
None of them.
We've got a list.
We've got about 20 different locations.
It's like 120 things that we've said we wanted to do. And this one is very similar to another one that we've said before, where we've seen kayakers just outside of our window on the Chicago River. But yesterday, out in the Aurora area on the Fox River, the Mid-American Canoe and Kayak Race took place.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
How fun would it be if the three of us were in a canoe trying to get down the...
You know, you actually...
I'm just picturing it in my head right now.
I recall...
Hey, Mo! Hey, wait a minute!
Hey, fellas!
No, your other left.
You're going to sink us! That's what you're going to do!
What would that be?
Now, I recall... this has been a few years ago now. We were watching some kayakers here on the river just below us here because we can see them from the WGN Radio 720 AM newsroom.
Yes, from the suite
and
our 18th floor.
You came in to the newsroom and were watching them and really were making some serious, you know, coming up with some suggestions or ideas. How do we do this?
Fantastic. You know? It would be so easy because... I mean, now when we first started talking about this, we would have had to have like 1,000-foot wires to do it. Now everything's wireless and Bluetooth, and we could easily, do it without any connections.
No, I will say
it's wired connections.
It is actually fun being out there. I have done it with my wife, and she had some friends that came into town.
Kayak or canoe?
Yeah, kayaking down on the Chicago River.
Yeah.
We did it from that little company that's just a little bit to our to our east
where
here.
You can rent a kayak.
Yeah, and you kayak all the way down toward the Merchandise Mart, and then a little further than that, and then you just start to come back. And it's kind of cool. I mean, it's good exercise, and it's a good view of the city from where you are.
Yeah. I think it would be good exercise for Schwanee because I would just figure on sitting back in the canoe and not doing anything.
And me doing all the work.
Stroke. That was George Clooney. From his Broadway debut in the play Good Night and Good Luck, in which he plays the legendary journalist Edward R. Murrow. He could make history tonight. It's his Broadway debut. He's nominated for a Tony Award for this stunning performance in this stunning play that If you don't remember the actual Edward R. Murrow era of journalism, which would be, what, the early 50s, mid-50s, right, Schwani? It was right about that
time. It was in really throughout the decade of the 1950s, but began in the 40s because he was reporting from London during World War II.
Right. He was
the radio.
He was the leading journalist reporting from the battlefields of World War II. But when he, this play in particular, talks about the Joseph McCarthy era of exposing, either rightfully or not, people that the former Wisconsin senator thought was a communist, and how that intertwined with journalistic integrity and fear-mongering and disinformation. It's a fascinating look back at something which actually happened in America, where Edward R. Murrow and his news team took on McCarthy in this era of paranoia and propaganda and retribution. It's a stunning play, and it's beautifully presented. It's up for 5 Tony Awards tonight, including one for George Clooney for Best Actor in a Play. So it'll be very interesting as the Tony Awards are given out tonight. Did you ever see the movie Good Night and Good Luck?
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. George Clooney directed that movie. He didn't star in it like he is in this play, which, by the way, tonight is the final performance of that play. It's been running on Broadway for a little while now. I don't know if it's going to be touring. I can't imagine that George Clooney will be touring. You know, if it does tour, I would imagine somebody else will take over the role of Edward R. Murrow. But it's a stellar cast, and it's a powerful production, which is not only about that era, this pivotal moment in America, where a powerful government official is, a U.S. senator is accusing people rightfully and wrongfully of activities which he deemed to be un-American. And Murrow and CBS took him on and called him every step of the way. It's one with that has a message which I think is still relevant today. So if, you know, who knows what's going to happen with the play now, but do yourself a favor and see this movie. Am I right, Schwani? This is,
oh yeah, you can still see the movie, and they took great pains to recreate the events of what was going on around it. And there's kind of a wonderful sidebar story with the producer Joe Wershba and his wife. They weren't supposed to be married and work at the same time at the company, so they had to take off their wedding rings before they went to work. But everybody knew they were married anyway.
That's part of the play. That's an integral part.
One great thing about the movie, though, it's shot in black and white.
Yeah.
To emulate and represent black and white TV.
Give you the feel of that era and how they stage all of this. I'm sure they're going to be showing clips of this tonight during the Tony Awards. But the way that they stage all of this, many of the nominations are for stage direction and scenery and, you know, that sort of thing. It's more than just a dialogue, you know, on stage. It's scenery is moving everywhere, and the way they incorporate actual footage of that era of Joseph McCarthy and other people who were integral to this part of the story, all part of that play. So it'd be interesting to see what happens. Some of the other nominees for tonight for Best Play include English, the play called English. Also one with some Chicago roots, the play called Purpose, which originated at the Steppenwolf Theater with Felicia Rashad of The Cosby Show directing, and that's up for several Tony Awards for tonight. Oh, Mary is nominated for Best Play. John Proctor is the villain. And The Hills of California for Best Musicals this year. Buena Vista Social Club, for which we will see a performance, by the way. Dead Outlaw, they're also going to do a performance from that. Earlier I was talking about Death Becomes Her. There is the musical called Operation Mincemeat, a new musical, and also Maybe Happy Ending. That is, I haven't seen the show, but people who know better than I do about Broadway shows are telling me that that could be the likely winner tonight for the best musical. So anyway, we'll keep an eye on the Tony Awards for tonight. We'll give you a full recap of this on Bob Sirott's show tomorrow morning when we talk entertainment between 8 and 8:30. And, of course, all morning long on the WGN-TV morning news. Speaking of the WGN-TV, there is a very special program that will be on at 3 o'clock this afternoon, hosted by my pal Dina Bear, called Pope Leo the 14th, From Chicago to the World, a one-hour special. Dina joins us to tell us about it next. Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. On May 8th of this year, Robert Francis Prevost was named the head of the Catholic Church, Pope Leo the 14th. Born in Chicago in south suburban Dalton. The first pope to have been born in the United States and in North America. The first to hold Peruvian citizenship. The first from the Order of St. Augustine. All of it will be profiled today in a special program that will be on WGN-TV this afternoon at 3 o'clock called Pope Leo the 14th, From Chicago to the World, a one-hour special hosted by my pal, Dina Bear, who joins us on the phone line right now. Good morning, Dina. How are you, my friend?
Good morning, Dean. Thanks for having me on.
Wonderful to talk to you. Nobody has covered this story with such depth and accuracy and compassion, I don't think, as you have, from the election of a new pope to the naming of Pope Leo, which turned out to have a Chicago side story. What's it like for you? I mean, you've done this several times now, gone to Rome, waiting for the white smoke to come out, the naming of new popes. You've got some history with all of this.
So much emotion, Dean. You know, I remember being there when Pope Francis was elected, and they said to me, oh, it's probably going to be a couple of days because there had been a couple of votes that the black smoke came out. And I just had this strange feeling that it was going to happen sooner. And I went and gathered all my notes, and I had about 100 things to say because I was going to be on the air for a long time. And when I got to the end of them, then Mark Sapelsa, who, of course, was our anchor, said, how do you feel? And I hadn't stopped to think about how I felt, and just tears came to my eyes. And the same thing happened this time. I'm so glad you asked that. We were sitting on the set with Father Pat McGrath, Ben Bradley and I, when the announcement happened. And I had known all of the candidates and all of the cardinals going through, and this sleeper candidate, this, Robert Francis Prevost. And as the announcement came and they said, Roberto Francesco, I was like, oh my goodness, that's the American. And both Ben and Father Pat looked at me and like, I don't think you heard that right. I don't think you heard that right. And of course, it was right. And it was just such an amazing thing to think that a cardinal from North America would be the Pope. And the fact that he had touched so many people in such profound ways locally, and he's the leader of the worldwide Catholic Church, but he's a regular guy who's going to Aurelio's and like some of your old haunts.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's almost like that dawned on, we were so shocked to learn that an American had been chosen that it almost got by us that somebody from the Chicago area, from Dalton, had been selected, right? Yeah, Chicago's very own, right?
it was amazing. And then, of course, as we delved more deeply into the man, he not only was from the south side of Chicago, but he spent his time as a missionary in Peru. And when you think about Peru, it's, you know, the Amazon rainforest, right? Machu Picchu, they have the sacred Valley Inca Trail, right? So rich with beauty and archaeological sites. But at the same time, there's so many poor people there. And Pope Leo went there and he essentially built the Catholic Church there. And there are still people to this day who remember him, Monsignor Roberto, as they called him. And we have a whole story about his time in Peru with his good friend, Father Tony Pizzo, who was there with him, who still lives on the south side now, you know, back here in the Chicago area. And they just give us such an interesting insight into who this man is, who now is our Holy Father. I'll tell you one quick story. For example, Father Pizzo, he traveled to Rome. He was in Rome visiting family in Sicily. And he ended up, when he heard that Robert Prevost became Pope Leo, he went up to Rome and he went to pray at this shrine of Our Lady of Good Counsel. Well, lo and behold, Pope Leo walks in the door. And he was like, my buddy. But more importantly, they decided to go to Mass the next day. They were going to say Mass at the shrine of St. Peter. And he asked Father Tony, do you want to say Mass? After all, it's the anniversary of when you came into the church, his ordination. And he thought, oh my goodness, this man is meeting with world leaders now. And he has such a big, important job and a lot of weight on his shoulders. And he remembered Father Tony's anniversary. That's who this guy is.
Wow. Wow. So some really interesting insight as to who the man is. Outside of all the headlines that we've heard, while you were putting this special together, was there anything that really surprised you? Something that, you know, even you with all of your experience was surprised to learn about the new father?
I will say this is what surprised me. I had a great sense of the sacrifice that it takes. You know, you think about, wow, how lucky he is to be chosen as the Pope. But in talking with his brother said, you know, he would visit me every year and he would work on my house. He would like fix the gutters and things like this. And he said, he'll never be able to come home again. And it just dawned on me that the leaders in really any church, right, make such great sacrifices to try to lead their flock. And that to me gave me a new respect for him and for others that have come before him and others who will come after him.
What about this new global movement, Sing with Pope Leo? I know that that's something that you're going to cover in the show. What is that?
So Mike Lowe covered a story on Pope Leo in high school, and he was a thespian. He was in theater and he was in choir and he loved to sing. So the very first time he comes out on the balcony, instead of just speaking, he starts singing, right? Every Mass, he sings every part of the Mass. So the leader of the Pontifical Institute for Sacred Music in the Vatican, Father Melhart, said, well, people seem to want to sing along with him, but nobody knows the responses. So he starts this social media page. He's on Instagram. He is on TikTok. And he's like, let's sing with the Pope. And he starts teaching. He said it's like Pope karaoke. And he is teaching people how to respond. But it has gone viral. And it is so funny. We interviewed him from Rome. And I have little clips from it. And you know, we'll tell people how they can follow along if they want to as well.
Yeah, that, it sounds like it's going to be a really interesting special, really all-encompassing look at Pope Leo XIV from Chicago to the world. It's a one-hour special that you'll be able to see at 3 o'clock Central Time in Chicago, not only on WGN-TV, but also on WGN+, the TV streaming app on Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, and Samsung Smart TVs, and of course, streaming on WGNTV.com/live and the WGN News mobile app. That's a mouthful right there. But
there is no excuse to miss it, clearly. There,
yeah,
it's going to be everywhere.
Yeah, good luck not finding it someplace. There are
some pictures that you've never seen of Pope Leo as he was growing up. There's a lot of really interesting stories about who he is, and including some of the real behind the scenes, like how do they make the sausage in the conclave, and what he was doing at that moment when it seemed as if he was going to become Pope.
Wow.
So those insights from the cardinals who were in the conclave, I think, are really fascinating and people will be interested to hear about.
Sounds great. It's live 3 o'clock this afternoon, but also will be repeated on all those places that I just said tonight at 6 o'clock, and again next Sunday, June 15th as well. Dina Bear hosting it all. I'll see you tomorrow, Dina. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Gene. Thanks for having me. See you tomorrow.
All right. What a busy day on our text line today.
Still talking about skunks?
People are extra texty today.
What? Extra what?
Texty. They're very texty. Thumbs are a wagon today.
Has the subject changed?
No, it's still mostly how to get skunk stink off of stuff, because we brought that up earlier today. People are, they're just commenting on everything. People who have seen Good Night and Good Luck. Also, you know, just kind of adding on to my adoration for it. You know, I think it's fantastic, but lots of people who saw it are saying very much the same thing. We were talking about D-Day earlier. We've had lots and lots of comments about that. People, remembering their parents' contributions. What's interesting is, you know, we've had several comments from people talking about their dads who were part of the D-Day invasion, or you know, part of the military theater during World War II, and saying how their dads never wanted to talk about it. They never wanted to remember. They never wanted to see the movie Saving Private Ryan. And you can understand that, right? They
absolutely
just didn't want to relive it. My brother was that way. When he came back from Vietnam.
Certainly.
You know, and I was, I don't know, I was maybe a teenager. I might have been 15 or 16 or something. My brother came back from Vietnam, and I said, "Oh, tell me all the stories. I want to hear," you know, and he goes, "Don't ever ask me. I never want to talk about it. I never want to think about it."
He was that direct about it.
His exact words.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, as I mentioned, my friend's father was at the invasion there on D-Day, and he did discuss it. He never went into a lot of detail or anything like that, and talked about, you know, moving through northern France. I think he was also involved in the liberation of Paris.
Yeah.
But by the same token, I was telling Andy earlier about this. I had two uncles that served in the Pacific. Never, ever discussed it.
Yeah.
Never discussed it.
Yeah. Yeah, same. I had a couple of uncles also that I don't remember them saying I never want to talk about it, but it was never talked about.
No, no.
So, you know, I just, and I can 1,000% empathize and understand why. Why would you want to relive any of that? It's got to be horrible. 630 area code. My husband and I biked through Normandy and Brittany a few years ago.
That'd be a beautiful ride.
Incredible, it says. Life-changing.
Mm-hmm.
You would be moved to tears. You should go. Do not hesitate.
I've also heard stories about the people in the villages that are in the north of France there, close to where the invasions took place, that have gone up to total strangers who are visiting Americans and continued to thank them for what they did.
I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah, to thank them for what they did.
Yeah, I hope. I know the people's perceptions of Americans have changed through the years. I certainly hope that that's still the case. Let's you and I do that. Let's bike. Let's make a. Come on, what do you think?
Okay, are you suggesting doing the show for bicycle? Also?
No, I'm thinking bicycle built for two. I think that would be
and I on a bicycle built for two.
Yeah, and you can be in front because I would like you to do most of the work if possible. If that's
and all you're going to do is trying to move around and back there to knock me off the bicycle.
I would just tell you to quit riding over the bumps. It's hard to eat this submarine sand. I believe I heard Chwani say that it might rain later on. So we'll keep an eye on that. Keep you posted on all the latest weather info throughout the day. In the meantime, we've got our Food Time show coming up after 12 o'clock. Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. And we're going to be doing some outside grilling, not literally today. Although, would it kill him to put a little platform out here on the 18th floor of our building so I could put a Weber grill out there?
With the glass bottom so you could see down below.
Oh, now see, you ruined it.
Just like at the Sears Tower?
Yeah, see, you've just ruined it now. I'm too terrified of heights.
Yeah, I am too.
I don't even like to walk by the windows. That's how scared I am of heights. But, yeah, okay, let's say there's a glass bottom. Let's pretend like I'm not a big fraidy cat.
Well, you can always put like a mat down there because you don't want the grill to roll. So
I would like some AstroTurf,
yeah,
please.
There you go. Make it look like outside.
Do we have the budget for some AstroTurf? Let's put that in there. As long as I'm imagining that they were going to put a balcony out there, I may as well think, how cool would that be, though, if I could actually grill during the show?
Oh, man, that would be awesome for all of us.
Have burgers for everybody every week? That'd be so great. But I'm going to do on my Wednesday cooking segment on TV, I'm going to do my first grilling outside this week. And I'm my topic this week is food on a stick.
Oh, nothing better.
Food on a stick. A variety of kebabs, some beef kebabs, chicken kebabs.
Do you do veggie kebabs also?
I could.
Yeah.
I could do veggie kebabs. Do you have a preference? What would you like? How may I take your order,
peppers,
sir?
Tomatoes.
What can I get for you? Let me bring you the menu, sir. What would you like on that?
Can I come over?
Yes.
Oh, you're actually inviting me to the TV station.
You're very needy today.
I'm needy? What do you mean I am needy?
This is like the fifth time you've said, could I come over? I want to come with you.
Can I come over?
No, do you like veggie the kebabs?
Yes, I do.
Really?
Yes, I do. I love grilled veggies, cooked, raw.
Well, what if I did some beef tenderloin?
Oh!
With
onions,
green
and peppers.
Pepper.
Yes, yes, yes.
Onion, cherry tomato.
Yes.
Maybe a mushroom.
No, I am coming over, whether you want me there or not.
I want you there.
Okay. Boy, that's a first.
Until you were so needy. Now you seem like you're going to be kind of a pest.
I want to come over.
I was thinking about that. Let me check the Andy factor here, because Andy's our finicky eater on the show.
True.
Oh, put broccoli on them, too.
Yeah, then I'll run. I would.
What do you like on a kebab?
On my kebab.
Does that beef kebab sound okay?
I love the beef kebab. And if you put some onion and some green and red pepper, I'm good.
Oh, there you go. Yes.
Wow, look at our Andy's growing up.
Good with those.
Look how cute that is. Our Andy's growing.
He's all grown up.
He has vegetables. The beef or chicken? Chicken?
I like them both. You can put both on there.
Okay. All right. How about this? Listen to this. How about brat kebabs?
Oh, really?
Where I take a bratwurst and put with onions and pepper. I think most
that
like
sounds
onions.
Delicious,
right?
Yeah,
onions and peppers with that.
I take a brat and cut it into, you know, like two inch pieces, maybe something like that. Cram it on a stick. Not a phrase. Heard
that's
very
a very
often.
Good idea.
I don't believe you ever heard Julie Child say cram it on a stick.
No.
Expanding my culinary vocabulary. Actually, there's somebody had sent me a note at some company that's got a cheese bratwurst.
Hmm.
They're bratwursts that have shredded cheese inside of the brat. So when you make the brat, you could just make it like a regular bratwurst and eat it on a bun. But I'm thinking about doing it like a kebab.
Okay.
That would be really tasty.
I love a good bratwurst.
Yeah.
I love a bratwurst.
Yep.
Now, how about this? This isn't for everyone. I think this may be where we lose Andy. Ground lamb. Take the ground lamb and shape it almost like a hot dog and put that on a stick. So it's like a...
Why not?
A ground lamb kebab.
Why not?
Andy?
See ya.
Yeah, I didn't think that would go
over. Bye-bye.
What about like a burger, though? What if it was
yeah,
like
a lamb beef? Burger?
Would that be all right?
Yeah, a little burger. A little...
You just don't care for the lamb.
Not a big lamb fan, no.
Okay. Well, anyway, that's what I'm going to do on TV this week. I'm going to have like food on a stick.
It's good. Good and good for you.
Good and good for you, exactly.
It certainly is.
All right.
So I can come over now.
Yeah, if you're Shawnee, you're always welcome.
Now, Andy, are you taking note of this?
Yeah.
Did you hear what he just said?
Well,
you're always welcome.
There's a record of it. It's on the air.
There is.
Yeah, but
you're
you know,
always welcome.
I've said so many things on the air that I don't mean, though. I've lied so many times on the air. It's not really not even fun. 11:50. This is Dean Richards Sunday morning. What do you say we get into our A-list interview for today? Box office numbers at the movies. This is pretty much the way I expected things to go this weekend. Although there were a couple of new movies that opened, there was no question in my mind that the number one and two movies of the weekend were going to be Lilo and Stitch, which as of right now is still number one. It's hovering at about $62 million right now. Not bad for a third week of release. And Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, is $27 million in the number two spot. After that, it's Karate Kid Legends, Final Destination Bloodlines, and Bring Her Back, rounding out the top five movies of the weekend. One of the new movies, though, and this is, I think you have to sort of acquire a taste for Wes Anderson movies. They are quirky. They're very unusual, both in story and visual. They're geometric. They're very precise. The acting is very deadpan. But for some reason, I find them incredibly entertaining. I really liked the new movie that director Wes Anderson has given us that opened this week called The Phoenician Scheme. It's about one of the richest people in the world who is also one of the most despised people in the world. And he hooks up with his estranged daughter to pass along his fortune to her if something should happen to him. The movie stars Benicio del Toro, Oscar winner, as the richest man in the world. Mia Tripleton plays his daughter in this movie. Mia Tripleton is a young actress who happens to be the real-life daughter of actress Kate Winslet. And she is really, really good. This is not a Nepo baby kind of performance, you know, where the performance is substandard and she just happens to be Kate Winslet's daughter. She can hold her own. She's quite good in this movie, as is Michael Cera, who you may know from the Superbad movies. They are the three primary stars, although this movie, as is the case with many Wes Anderson movies, is loaded with A-listers. They're all over the place. Tom Hanks, Scarlett Johansson, Bryan Cranston, Bill Murray, the list goes on and on. They're really more in cameo performances in this movie. But a couple of weeks ago, I went to New York and sat down with Benicio and Mia and Michael, and we talked about the appeal of a Wes Anderson movie.
A Wes Anderson movie. And I can only imagine the excitement for actors that get to be in them. Benicio, is it a special thing for an actor?
Definitely. And it's not because it's on three levels, I think. Is number one, you're going to be part of the Wes Anderson, you know, world. And then the script. It's one hell of a script with characters that are layered, and they have all these three characters have arcs, and then the chance to work with actors like Mia and Michael and Tom Hanks and Bryan Cranston and Riz Ahmed and everybody else. You know, it's just a one hell of a feeling to be a part of a film that is going to be so much fun that way as well.
Michael, what does that mean? What is Wes Anderson world? Almost sounds like an amusement park ride.
Well, it means kind of a lot of things. I mean, the movie is Wes's world. I mean, his imagination and his rendering of his material that he generates, which is incredible. But also there's the filmmaking experience as an actor of working with Wes and this kind of like world-class experience. Mm-hmm. You get like fed very well and you're surrounded by amazing people, like Benicio is saying. Also Wes's crew, who's been sort of cultivating over like 30 years of just, you know, people that work very closely with him. It's just a great experience all around.
But it's such a stylized look and a stylized feel and mm-hmm. a stylized way of speaking, Mia, isn't it? As I'm watching it, I'm wondering in some way if it's a little restrictive because mm-hmm. it's so geometric looking and everything. And I wonder if there's like a lack of freedom as an actor.
It's interesting because, yes, he is very... You know you're watching one of his films when it starts. And so he does have a specific style. And yes, it is quite stylized. But at the same time, he has such a plan. It is so bombproof. And because that plan is in place, because everything has been very rigorously thought through and planned out, when it actually comes to being on set, we got the opportunity to have about a week and a half of rehearsals before we actually got to our even pre-shoot, which was just one scene a day week, and then we actually got to the principal photography. When you actually start the filming bit, you know what you're doing, and because you know what you're doing, because he's so clear with what it is that he wants and has such a specific plan in mind, you actually have a lot of ability to kind of go, okay, well, we know what we're doing, we have a plan, let's actually just like try something that maybe let's do something different. Or he'll notice something that one of us did in between takes, or just a little human mannerism that one of us had, and then he'll want to sort of bring that in. And we'll do so many takes of things,
right.
He'll find things to add on to the plan that he already had.
Did I read correctly that you once wanted to be a marine biologist?
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes, it's true.
That's
true. And I do have my scuba diving license.
Really?
I wanted to do that, and then I realized that I'm no good at maths and science. No, I still find it incredibly fascinating.
It were the things that you had to learn to go along with it.
Well, yeah, kind of.
Okay.
But I was, I must have been 10 when I was really wanting to do that. Even before, I'd watched Blue Planet. It was my favorite thing to watch when I was younger. Still is.
Did Benicio and Michael, did you once want to do something else before you became actors?
Yeah, of course. I mean, for me, it was, I didn't know what I wanted to be for a while. But when I was younger, I wanted to be a basketball player. You know, and quickly you realize, well, you know what? It's not as easy as it looks, or as the dream looks, you know.
Yeah. Michael?
Well, I mean, I kind of started working when I was young.
Right.
And it kind of just like accidentally became my job. But I think if I wasn't doing this, maybe I'd be like a private investigator.
Oh, I can see that.
Right?
No. You do realize that now that you've said that, the whole world is going to go, we need to see a film where Michael's a private investigator.
I think I could do it.
Nobody would ever, you'd be Columbo. You're like the new Columbo. Nobody would expect you.
He's working. He's hustling. He's hustling.
Michael Cera and Benicio del Toro and Mia Tripleton, daughter of Kate Winslet. They star in the new Wes Anderson movie. It's called The Phoenician Scheme that is out there. Shwani, what would you have been had you not become America's favorite newsman? what else would you have been?
Actually, okay, you want to know? I seriously considered going into acting in theater in high school.
Really?
Yes. And when I was a little kid, I thought it was so cool to watch all these men blast off into space. wanted to be an astronaut.
Right.
And just like your interviewee said there, it's not as easy as it looks.
Right.
So.
Right.
And how about you?
Well, you know, I had my pretend radio station when I was 10 years old, so I always sort of had my eye on this sort of work. But, you know, had I stuck with it, I'm pretty sure I could have been a produce manager at AMP by now. 40 years later.
With a name tag and everything.
With the name tag and an apron, the whole deal.
Hi, my name is Dean. Yeah. It's a pleasure to serve you.
Andy, what would you like to have been?
I probably would have followed in my mother's footsteps.
Teacher?
Become a teacher. The teacher? A very noble profession.
That's probably what I was.
Yes. Hello, Mr. Mazur.
Exactly.
Good morning, Mr.
The bell does not dismiss you. I dismiss you.
Here's an apple, Mr. Mazur. And then you take the inside of your Bic pen out and use it to shoot spitballs at him.
Exactly. Show them all the things you can do.
That's what a young Dean Richards was like. Yeah. Want to know what my favorite story is that you've done today?
Well, you mentioned the dolphin.
That's it.
Is that the one?
It's my favorite. It's going to be a new feature on the show. My
favorite story of the day.
Shawnee did.
See how long that lasts.
I loved your dolphin story.
Like the dolphin story. Okay.
New dolphin was just born at where? Brookfield Zoo?
Brookfield Zoo. Yes. Mother and daughter. Child doing well. Not sure if it's a boy or a girl. But
the newborn was 33 pounds.
And over 4 feet long.
Every mother out there right now just went, what?
What?
Ouch. Have you ever seen schools of dolphins?
No.
Swimming?
No.
Yes, I have.
No. Yeah, I imagine you have, Andy.
Yes.
But yeah.
Yeah, you were in San Diego for a long time.
Well, not just there, but I was in Florida last January, I want to say, and we were on the West Coast, and we were on a little tour boat that was kind of taking us through some of the channels near Naples, and all of a sudden we looked down, and there's a pod just, you know, roughhousing with each other and trying to keep pace with the boat.
Yeah.
I've never seen that.
It was cool.
I've seen them in Malibu when I've been out there, you know, just having lunch at a restaurant near the ocean. And you see these school, like, you know, five, six, seven dolphins swimming in unison together, you know, making their dolphin sounds. You know, having a good time. It's quite something to see.
It's cool, yeah.
And also on, you know, I've been on several cruises. We've done several WGN listener cruises and had a great time. And I think it was on the Alaska cruise where, you know, the ship is going, however fast the ship goes, but the dolphins are keeping up with the ship.
Yeah, they're quick.
And just, you know, like accompanying the ship. It's I mean, oh. You probably think these are dolphin sounds that are playing. This is a secret recording I made of Shawnee before the show today. This is Shawnee before coffee.
They say that dolphins have their own language.
Yeah.
They actually can communicate with those sounds that they make.
Yeah.
And yes.
I have enough trouble understanding humans. I don't need any more species. I would have liked to have been in the television executive meeting when somebody walked in and said, I've got an idea for a TV show.
Let's do a show on a dolphin.
A boy and his dolphin. But I remember the show fondly.
I do, too. In fact, I was talking with Ron Brown here in the newsroom, and he said he watched it all the time, and so did I.
Oh, I think
Channel 9 did reruns.
Did we do the reruns?
Yeah.
I got to look up and see what year this was now, because...
probably mid-60s,
yeah,
early to mid-60s.
65-ish. Oh, here. First episode was 1964. Final episode, 1967. It was on three years.
Seasons, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
With Luke Halpin. He was one of the brothers. Sandy? Was he the older brother?
I think he was the oldest, yeah.
Tommy Norton was Bud.
A lot of kids were named Bud in those TV shows. There was Bud Anderson on Father Knows Best.
Brian Kelly played the father. Do you know that Burt Reynolds was on Flipper?
Really?
I'm just looking at the cast list. Barbara Feldon from Get Smart. Andy Devine, the old actor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they were all on Flipper. 64 to 67. I loved that show. Dolphin Talk this morning is now eclipsing how to get rid of skunk stink as the number one topic
on the text line.
On our text line this morning. Well, you got to say this show, really, we've got our finger on the pulse of what America
we do
is concerned about.
Without question. Without question.
Think of all the issues facing America right now. Really, is there anything worse than skunk stink? We've had like a half a dozen people text us this morning that they got sprayed by a skunk, or last night they hit a skunk.
And then the way to get rid of it is
tomato juice.
Tomato juice. Yeah. Yep. Now, next week, we need to master the language of the dolphin, and watch the movie The Day of the Dolphin with George C. Scott.
Sure.
And then we can communicate in that fashion. How's that sound?
Yes. And do the whole show in
dolphin. Do the whole show in dolphinese.
Well, to a lot of people, this show sounds like that to them anyway.
Without even trying.
Yeah. It's... listen to this, though. 847 area code. I heard this morning that dolphins are so smart they can detect two heartbeats in the body of a pregnant woman, and they're immediately attracted to her to support and protect her.
Hmm. Animals are amazing.
Yeah.
Dolphins just amazing.
Dolphins are exceptionally intelligent, though, right?
Yeah, and part of this story, as I was reading the information from Brookfield Zoo, said that there was another dolphin who is also a mother that was with the mother dolphin by her side, like swimming around for support
dolphin.
Until the baby was born, and then when the baby was born, shot right to the surface, and that attending mother went right with the dolphin.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to make sure everything was all right.
Well, animal life is very, very interesting. You know, you spend any time over at the Ape House at Lincoln Park Zoo, and you watch, the little baby chimps, I guess, or gorillas. I don't know technically what they are, but there is a behavior. And a protection.
Yes, there is.
Between the maternal and paternal gorillas and the little babies, you see that all the time in nature. But it seems to be especially the case with dolphins.
Yeah.
You ever swim with a dolphin?
I've never really, outside of seeing...
Do you want to?
That would be fun. They like people.
I would like to do it.
Well, let's do the show then from
Andy.
Let's do it.
Can we get you in on this?
Yeah, I definitely would go there.
Okay.
They're like the puppies of the sea.
Yeah. Until they bite your head off.
Yeah, that's true.
Dolphins won't do that.
What?
Dolphins won't do that.
They don't? They're not?
They're very, very docile, friendly animals, yes. Yep.
Could I kiss one?
Probably.
Would I want to?
No.
Okay. Here's a text that kind of wraps up today's program, encompasses all the topics on today's program. 708, Dean, you guys are skunk-tastic.
Not sure how to take that, but...
I don't, yeah.
I take it as a compliment.
Skunk-tastic.
Skunk-tastic. let's see. We're going to get into our food time show in a second here. Food on a stick. If anyone's got ideas, recipes, thoughts, I've got some. But I want to share with you 312-981-7200, our phone number. You were talking about your veggie kebab earlier, Shwani?
Yeah.
Somebody said add some pineapple to all those veggies.
Pineapple is great.
Marinated in teriyaki sauce. And then put it on
that
the grill.
That sounds great.
Right?
Yes.
It's an excellent suggestion that I'm going to steal.
Now, one of the things that I would think you'd have to keep in mind if you're doing these veggie kebabs is, you know, they would burn quite quickly.
What do you mean, the stick?
Yeah, and, you know, you're trying to cook the meat, you know, well enough so it is cooked through.
I have a suggestion for that.
Okay.
You take your skewers, as we call them in the culinary trade.
You just called them sticks before, so you've learned the new name now. Is that it?
I didn't want to seem pretentious. I like to be a man of the people whenever possible. You take your what you do is you take your wooden sticks and soak them in water for about an hour first.
Okay.
Put them in water. They won't burn.
Okay. All right.
They may brown a little. They won't brown a little, but they don't get.
They don't burn. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So there's a helpful tip.
There is.
Someone said corn dogs on a stick would be good.
Corn dogs would be great. Yes. Yep.
You want to hear Dean Richards' true confession?
Sure.
I've never had a corn dog.
You've never had a corn dog?
Never had a
corn never dog. Had a corn dog?
Nope.
At a state fair or a county fair?
Nope.
Okay. We're doing a road trip going to Cozy Dog Drive-In in Springfield on Route 66.
Oh, yeah.
We can do the show from there.
Okay.
You'll love it.
I've had deep-fried pickles on a stick.
Oh, that's good.
That's good eating.
That's really good eating.
That's good eating right there. I don't know why I've never had a corn dog.
What about a fried Twinkie?
Nope.
I haven't either.
It's the most unusual food you've ever eaten.
Yeah, right.
The most unusual
Andy,
food? Those
Andy,
bugs.
That would be a Brussels sprout.
That would be a hamburger.
A Brussels sprout. Oh, speaking of grilled veggies.
Don't you want to know the most unusual food I've ever eaten?
What is it?
Cow brains.
Oh, okay. No, the most unusual stuff were the bugs that we had.
Wait a minute. You're just going to roll right over that?
Well, Clay, you ate cow brains.
I ate cow brains, and you'd have nothing to say about that?
All right. How did it taste?
Awful.
What did it look like?
It looked like quiche.
It looked like quiche.
It had the texture of quiche.
Where did you have this?
Some restaurant. It was some Eastern European restaurant. They're like, sir, would you like to try the cow brains? It's like, yeah.
So you thought you were feeling exotic, and so you hadn't tried it.
I'm not a squeamish eater. I'll try things.
But Andy, you didn't like them.
Andy.
Yeah, right.
No, I was.
It comes to you, and it looks like quiche. And then you eat it, and the texture is kind of like bleh.
Yeah,
it wasn't good.
No.
But you got to try things one time.
You do. It's like I tried those bugs that you fed us at tree time.
I did feed you bugs one time.
Mm-hmm. That was the most unusual.
Is that the most horrible thing you've ever eaten?
Yes. Yeah. But you were mentioning Brussels sprouts a moment ago.
Oh, don't get
grilled
me started.
Brussels sprouts on the grill. Oh, fabulous,
baby.
Fabulous.
How about if I took a skewer, put Brussels sprouts on the skewer?
And what else?
Just Brussels sprouts.
That's all?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that would be awesome. That'd be awesome. And serve them with a protein of your choice.
Well, yeah, I guess. I guess you could.
Sure.
I may try that. I think I might par cook the Brussels sprouts a little bit so they're a little soft.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you don't want them to burn up.
Yeah, right.
But so maybe I might, I don't know. I'm going to give it a try.
They go great with a grilled salmon.
That would be delicious.
And some roasted potatoes.
That would be good.
Oh.
You know, okay, here's my idea on a stick. Brussels sprouts and cow brains together. What do you think I'm talking about? It might be the greatest song that's ever been recorded.
I'm crazy.
The great Patsy Cline.
Crazy for me.
The song written by Willie Nelson. Crazy. one of the many, many, many great hits of the great Patsy Cline. I play it because we're going to be doing a special Dean's Night Out, this time at the Drury Lane Theater in Oak Brook Terrace. We're going to be out there on June 27th, Friday night, to see their new show, Always Patsy Cline, a show that celebrates the amazing talent of Patsy Cline, but also takes you into her very troubled personal life, her tragic ending in a plane crash. But the, you know, the bulk of this show are the great songs that are performed, like this one, and Walking After Midnight, Sweet Dreams. I mean, I could go on and on. I'm such a big Patsy Cline fan. I can't wait to see this show. And I would love for you to join me on this Dean's Night Out. You can win free tickets to join me. Again, it's Friday, June 27th. We're going to give away 10 pair of tickets. The way that you register to win is by going to WGNradio.com/contests. And, you know, you just put your name in. And we'll pick out 10 winners. Each winner will get a pair of tickets. And we have these really nice pre-show receptions where, you know, we have a little libation. We, you know, we chat. I answer personal questions about Dave Schwann. You know, I mostly don't really tell the truth about him. But, you know, people are always asking about you. So I make stuff up.
Yeah, I'm figured.
They don't,
figured.
They don't know that you weren't really an Olympic athlete. They don't know that you weren't.
What's Andy, do you get questions about what Dean is like? And
all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. So do I.
People stop me on the street.
Andy, what's that sport where you do the broom?
Oh, that's curling.
Curling, yeah, curling. Curling. That's what I tell people, that you are an Olympic curling champion.
Nice. A curly champion.
Yeah, that's what I said. Fight me.
So, okay.
So that's what it's going to be like now.
That, you know, I spent more time in the hall in fourth grade than in the class because of my antics. Yep. Yes.
Same with me. We should have known each other when we were in grade school.
I kept saying if we could have had a radio network from our respective homes.
Well, we would have been expelled from school.
Yes. Without a doubt.
Had we known each other then with our goofiness. We would have been kicked out of school a long time ago.
Wouldn't have even made it to first grade.
We'd still be in reform school. So, you know, we're going to have this pre-show reception, and Schwani and Andy said that they're going to try to join us at this particular Dean's Night Out.
Be fun.
I have June 27th written down here.
All right. So, but you have to confirm to let me know.
I said I'd call you about 4:30, quarter to 5.
You may need to give us a little more time than that.
Well, 3 o'clock then?
Oh, gosh. All right. Fine. Yeah, whatever. Show up. I'll be.
That sounded like an order.
I'll be over at Mangiano's. Show up. Having some dinner. I don't know what you're doing. Yeah. So, you know, this could be a spectacular night.
I'll have to check my schedule
because all three of us have never been to a Dean's Night Out.
No, we haven't. Yeah. Not all three of us. No.
Yeah. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Okay. I'll let you know.
Go to WGNradio.com/contests. Enter to win. Who knows what's going to happen that night? Welcome to Food Time, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. The award-winning All Things Edible program heard every Sunday at this time. Coming Wednesday, on my TV cooking segment, I'm going to be going outside for the first time this year. And we're going to get back out on the grill. Going to get the old Weber out there and do some food on a stick. Try to do, you know, seasonal kinds of things. We're going to be doing pizzas on the grill. We're going to be doing burgers on the grill. We're going to be doing seafood on the grill. But I wanted to do, you know, something that is easy. You know, with all of these cooking segments that I do on TV, I always try to keep in mind, make it easy, make it delicious. I'm not a fan of these overly complex recipes with exotic ingredients that are difficult to find. The things that I cook are, I hope, super delicious and pretty easy to put together. And I think these food on a stick recipes that I'm working on right now are going to be pretty great. We're talking about veggie kebabs on a skewer. Most people just use wooden skewers. And if you do use wooden skewers, soak them in water for about an hour first. And that will help to prevent them from burning up once they're on the grill. You shouldn't really be, you know, putting a super high heat underneath any of these anyway. Slow and steady generally is the best way to do it. You can put a little char on at the end, but don't overdo it with the heat on any of these things. But these veggie kebabs that we were talking about earlier are, you know, just simply put your favorite veggies on there. I love, of course, you know, slices of green pepper. I love the red bell pepper on there. I love onion. I love a cherry tomato on there. I love a mushroom on there. I love little pieces of squash, of zucchini squash on there. I think those are delicious. Somebody texted in and said, take all of those things, add some pineapple chunks to the skewer, and marinate it in teriyaki sauce. And that sounds absolutely amazingly delicious. I'm definitely going to give that a try. Chicken and beef kebabs are, you know, pretty simple. If you just alternate pieces of chicken or beef with green pepper, cherry tomato, you know, maybe a cherry tomato and a mushroom, those are all pretty good. If you're going to do chicken on the grill for kebabs, I would recommend using get some boneless chicken thighs. And cut the pieces of chicken from the thighs. I think they'll be a little more delicious, and they don't dry out as much as a chicken breast would do on the grill. Chicken thighs are much more forgiving on the grill, so I would do that. As far as the beef chunks, you know, choose whatever kind of beef that you like on there. Try to make it a little on the thicker side. Give it a good salt and pepper. For the beef kebabs, I like to put oregano on there also. I think that that's delicious. Same with the chicken. Salt, pepper, oregano, a little squeeze of lemon on there. You can't go wrong. We were talking about brat kebabs earlier. Taking bratwurst, cutting them into maybe like two-piece chunks, putting those on the skewer with some onion, you know, with, you know, vegetables of your choice. But somebody texted in, check this out. Somebody sent me a text and said, have you ever had root beer brats? Root beer brats. Wow, that sounds good. And I looked it up. I never have. It says that, see, here's a recipe that I found that said it's simply taking your bratwurst, you know, normal bratwurst that you would buy, marinating it in a can of root beer, can of, you know, regular full sugar. Don't get the ones with the fake sweeteners or anything in them. I don't know how friendly those would be on the grill, but you take your brats, you marinate it in root beer, and then alternate that on the skewer with some onions. And it's supposed to be delicious. It sounds like it would be really, really good. Has anyone had any experience with root beer brats? I love that idea. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Gloria in Antioch. Hi, Gloria. You're on WGN.
Well, hi. Well, I'm so happy to be talking to you.
It's my pleasure.
I finally got the nerve to call because I'm listening and thinking, oh my gosh, I got to tell them. But first of all, with your I'm calling for a different reason, but your shish kebab, well, I call them shish kebab.
Yeah.
Don't forget pork. It's fantastic, especially as a Greek shish kebab.
Now, what kind of pieces of pork do you put on your shish kebab? I like pork. I like pork tenderloin.
Yeah, I think I've used pork tenderloin because it cooks. The only thing is I like my veggies cooked a little longer. And so, and the pork tenderloin cooks up pretty quick. But,
right.
But yeah, that's what I use. And I just use my best friend. I'm a Greek Polack.
Nice.
My best friend was Greek, and so I learned a lot. But what I wanted to talk to you about.
Wait. Before we get off the tenderloins, though.
Okay.
So this is what I would do. I would take the pork tenderloin. You have to take that silver membrane off the pork tenderloin first. So cut that off.
Right.
Cut it into medallions to go on onto the skewer. But before you do that, marinate the pork tenderloin, olive oil, lemon juice, oregano, and garlic. At least an hour of the marinade makes all the difference in the world. And if you like your veggies a little more cooked than the meat, I mean, that's the kind of the tricky part about these kebabs. You know, everything has a different cooking time. Just do a bunch of veggie kebabs and then a bunch of pork separately, and you can get them exactly the temperatures that you want. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, exactly. I totally agree. And your recipe for the marinade is exactly what I use, except I can't use too much garlic these days.
Okay.
But
all right.
Sometimes I get lazy and I just brush it on and it's still good.
Yeah, a little flavor, you know, tiny bit. It's perfectly fine without it. But that's like the real deal Greek marinade with the garlic. But do it any way you want.
Yes, exactly. But I agree. Same thing with using the thighs rather than chicken breast. I totally agree with you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Much more moist. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you've had some experience with cow brains?
Well, I didn't. I don't remember if I ever ate them. I have a feeling I tried them, but my dad ate them all the time. My mom would make them, but the secret, what I was listening, the way you had it, it didn't sound very good to me. My mom would make them with scrambled eggs for my dad.
Sounds good.
And that was an essential, he loved it, and it was a special meal for him.
Isn't that something? That generation, they ate everything, didn't they?
Yes. Well, I'm going to be 80 this year, so I'm up there. But, my dad ate that. And what else was the other stuff? Oh, quiche, those kind of things. And
I've ever had quiche. What is quiche?
Oh, it's a sausage.
I only know it from the song, Who Stole the Quiche?
Yes.
Who stole the quiche? Who stole the quiche? Famous polka song.
Exactly. Hey, I had Frankie Yankovic at my wedding. Can you believe it?
Oh, I'm jealous.
That was a long time ago.
Oh, that's
great. Quiche is a sausage.
Okay.
It's a smaller, round sausage. I don't know if I've gotten it in. Some of the stores still sell it, and you could probably get it in a Polish store.
Sure.
My sister-in-law makes it all the time. How do I describe it? I think it has a barley type mixture, but I always kind of like saute it in a little bit of water to cook it, and then fry it.
And brown it up.
And it's used mostly as a breakfast from what I experience.
Like a breakfast sausage,
Yes.
All right.
Yes, but really, really good.
Well, the egg, I forget what kind of restaurant it was where I tried the cow brains. It was some kind of Eastern European restaurant.
Okay.
And it was served, it looked like if you were to take a piece of cauliflower and cut it into like steaks, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like a couple of inch steak and a cauliflower. That's kind of what it looked like. And then when you stuck your fork and knife into it, it had a little bit of a mushy texture. I know I'm I know people are eating lunch right now, so I apologize for that. it was very quiche-like. That's what the texture was like. It was like you were having quiche. So I would think that your mother probably did your dad a favor by mixing it in with the scrambled eggs.
Yes, I would think so. She probably browned it a little, knowing my, she was a good cook.
Yeah, that generation. Yeah. I remember some of my elders, you know, my elder Greek relatives, you know, they would take like the lamb's head and eat portions, you know, like they didn't leave anything.
Right.
This was like, you know, Depression era. You did not waste one morsel of food.
Go ahead. That's like that was the duck blood soup that my mom made. And oh my God, I miss that so much. And I have her handwritten recipe.
Oh, fantastic. That's fantastic.
It's kind of hard to get blood, and I don't know if anybody but me would eat it. So.
Yeah, you could go to the butcher at Jewel. Excuse me, do you have any blood I could buy, please?
Yes.
Hilarious. All right, Gloria, have a great day. I appreciate your call. Thank you very much.
I wanted to tell you about one other thing.
Yes.
About eating bugs.
Yes.
You guys were talking about that. Well, I was a principal for 20 years, and I was out in Grays Lake. And every year, my fourth grade teacher's daughter, who I don't remember her job, was dealing with the bugs. She would bring them in and give a talk to the kids about eating bugs. And then she would bring stuff for everybody to eat. I know one time I think I had a chocolate covered one, but that's all I would go. But we had kids that would eat even a live bug.
Ooh.
And oh my God, they loved it. So you brought back memories.
Well,
but
when we did it, the three of us did it, it was like chocolate covered grasshoppers or something like that. You couldn't even tell what it was. It was chocolate and something crunchy inside. You couldn't even really taste anything,
but the kids were so good. This one little boy had the live bug in his mouth, and they said they kind of said, you got to swallow that. You're torturing the kid, because he was letting it play in his mouth, and they even had the picture on the newspaper of him. But he was so cute.
That's so funny. I appreciate the call. I hope you have a great Sunday today. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Sunday afternoon, to be exact. 12:53, Dean Richards Food Time, 312-981-7200. Jeff, you're in Florida, is that right?
Yes, down in Tarpon Springs.
Oh, very nice. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it.
Oh, always love your show.
Thank you.
But when you're using pork or chicken, you always brine it in kosher salt. You have to try real hard. Especially like with chicken breasts, you have to try real hard to make it dry.
Because that kosher salt will, will infuse moisture into those.
Yes.
Right.
And if you cook it at the proper level with it, it will never be dry.
Yeah.
At the same level of time, it could possibly be dry.
Yeah. For how long do you brine? Let's say I've got four chicken breasts. For how long would you brine those?
Do it for a half an hour.
Okay. That's not bad. That doesn't add too much more prep time.
It works out so nice.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they were saying with the brats, then rinse it, put it into what the lady was saying with all that stuff, and let it sit. She said, what, a half an hour or so?
In the marinade.
Yeah, and I'm sure that would be really fabulous.
Yeah, that sounds like that would be good. I'm going to give that a try. I haven't really done too much brining. I have with turkeys around Thanksgiving. I haven't done it.
It keeps it from drying out.
Yeah, that's what everybody says.
It really
says.
Does.
Yeah. I'm going to give that a try. I appreciate the suggestion, Jeff.
Can I relate another thing?
Real quick.
You were talking about mushrooms.
Yes, sir.
And things like that. In Dam One Woods up there in Wheeling, I used to run my dog with my friends, and every year we would see this family out there with a pole that would extend, and had a little 4-inch block on the top of it. And out of the crotch of the trees, they would pull that stuff that's very colorful. It just looks like, you know, something you'd never want to eat.
Mold, yes. Right.
And four people would be down there underneath with sheets to catch it so it didn't hit the ground and break. And, you know, after a couple of years, I finally asked them, you know, what are you doing? And they said, we cook this stuff up, and it's wonderful. And one year I said, you know, okay, you know, I'm out here every Sunday. I will be here at, you know,
so you
a little after 11.
Did you try
it?
They
brought me some to try, and yeah, it was wonderful.
It was wonderful. Okay. All right.
But to look at it, you know, the way it comes off the tree, oh, Lord, I wouldn't touch it, but, oh, it was wonderful.
Yeah, I'd be careful with some of the stuff that might be growing out there. But, you got to.
I kind of took it for granted they knew what they were doing because, you know, it was passed down through the family, they said.
All right. All right. Say hello to everybody in Florida.
Came to America.
Say hello to everybody in Florida for us, and I appreciate you listening. Thank you for the call.